Hey there. Just before we start today's episode, I'd like to first apologize. The Church of God has tampered with my audio equipment, resulting in some weird sound quality issues towards the end of the episode. It's only for a couple of minutes, and I tried my best to rectify the situation. If it sounds a bit janky, that's why. I have now fixed the issue, and hopefully we'll be recording with no further technical problems. Hello, ghouls and ghoulettes, and welcome to The Gospel of Ghost, the podcast that aims to bring the lore and narrative of Ghost to the forefront of their music. I'm Niall, and today I am joined by a past guest. It's Bryn. How's it going?
Hey, Niall. I'm good, thank you. Keeping it good. Lockdown's ended, pretty much.
Pretty much.
Some normality in the real world.
Still no Ghost gigs announced, but whatever. I'll forgive them for that. How's things been in the Ghost fandom since we last spoke? For you, anyway.
Yeah, it's been still very busy. I think just sort of Instagram and social media has taken over a lot of people's lives over the last sort of 4 or 5 months. So yeah, just a lot of regular posting, a lot of theories, conspiracy theories, and talking about albums and the upcoming music, and just people just like, it's nice, it's healthy. That's what I find. It's a lot of...
What loser would theorize on the music of a band from a fictional universe? What kind of stone cold absolute nerd would do that? But no, yeah, people have been turning to social media, A, obviously because of the lockdown, and B, yes, because Ghost hasn't posted anything apart from merch advertisements.
Merch advertising. You are correct.
So yeah, they're really trying to make our own content, which, by the way, I just want to give a shout out to the Ghost community, because like the fan art some of these guys come up with is amazing. And all the other content as well, not just the fan art, everything else, the cosplays and like the music covers and stuff, it's all incredible. It really helps us. It really helps us keep going throughout these ghostless times.
Totally agree with that. So many talented people out there with so many different talented projects, and it's really good to see. Like every day I'm amazed by something, whether it's music, whether it's art, cosplay, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just waiting for like clearer pictures of Papa Four to come out, like proper clear pictures of the uniform he's going to wear, because I imagine the cosplayers are waiting with bated breath for those to come out so they can start them.
Agreed. It would be nice. Some high quality picks would be great.
Oh yeah, no, it'd be fantastic. Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about Infestissimum, because the last time you were on here, you were talking about Opus Eponymous. You seem to enjoy Primeval a lot. What is your take on Infestissimum as an album in general?
Yeah, I think it was like a big evolutionary step up from the first album. I think the first album, again, it was quite dark and like archaic and sinister, sort of cult and underground. But then obviously when they started to get a bit more fame and attention from the band, it's sort of like taking those sort of metal aspects and bringing them into a more dramatic open. I think it was a lot more fast paced as an album, a lot more, as I say, over the top and dramatic. And I think that's what really sort of kicked in for me.
Where would you personally rate it on your Ghost album list?
Oh, so I think Opus is definitely my favorite.
Opus is your favorite? Okay.
I think I enjoy sort of old sort of Black Sabbath type albums.
I'm expecting Infestissimum to be pretty high up then.
I think if I'm honest, it probably, I did like Meliora, so I think it would be Opus, then Meliora, and then in Infestissimum.
Yes, Meliora, that one that I have been pronouncing right the entire time on the podcast, not been pronouncing as Meloria. I swear to God. No, that makes sense, to be fair. Meliora, which is the correct name for that album, as everyone knows. No one would be stupid enough to create a Ghost podcast and forget how to pronounce Meliora.
That's brilliant.
For me, it was their top album, but I would say that if you loved Opus, if you loved Opus, maybe a step too far away from the original sound. But what I've discussed with Kat, who was the past guest, is that Infestissimum is like the Marmite of the Ghost fandom. Like, you either love it or hate it. And I'm sure you know there's a lot of Ghost fans out there that are like, oh yeah, I heavily dislike Infestissimum. And there's so many out there that are like, oh, I love this album, it's the best, I wish they'd stuck with this sound. There's not a lot of in between.
No, I'd agree with that. I think it's, as you say, it's a bit like Marmite. And I think it's probably the album that gets talked about the least, I think, compared to every other album. And I feel the only thing that does stand out is more Papa 2 in terms of the image.
Big Daddy Papa.
Big Papa, yeah, he stands out a lot more.
I love it when you call me Big Papa. Sorry. Yeah, no.
That's the other side of the Ghost fandom. So.
Yeah, I think I asked you last time, or was it Aiden, about how many not safe for work tags and contents you might get. But yeah, no, Papa 2, iconic. I think a lot of people would say he's possibly the best Papa, just in terms of visual design and attitude.
Yeah.
Oh, you agree, yeah?
That's hard. I think yeah, just in the general sense of like where everyone sort of either fantasizes about him or all would agree on that he is pretty the sort of standout image of the band. But I think for me personally, I do prefer Papa 1. Just again, it's that more sinister vibe. There's like an early print, I think, which is on the, I'm not sure if it's on the back of the actual album or it's on the photo album, like the picture disc vinyl. And it's like Papa One with the ghouls in the graveyard.
Yeah,
saying,
I know.
It's very, very sinister, and it's very, like, very cool. And I've always liked that image, that sinister image.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, cool. Yeah, I haven't actually met anyone whose favorite Papa is Papa One. Yeah, obviously, until now.
I like to be different.
Apparently so. I would say the majority of people, including myself, I'll be completely honest with you, his favorite Papa is Papa Three.
Yeah.
He is, you know, obviously, I love Papa Two just for the stern daddy that he is. Mm. And, you know, Papa One was obviously cool. He's never really got as much into the public eye for obvious reasons. The band just wasn't as big.
Yeah.
But I just love the fact that Papa 3 is a bisexual disaster. That's kind of how I would describe him.
My first time seeing the band was obviously Papa 3, and I think just everything about sort of charisma and the character, like he's great as well. I think there's lots of positives and negatives you can take from every single character that's been made in this universe, and yeah, you can really identify with some more, really like sort of have a contrast. It's good.
Agreed. With that said, shall we get on with the actual episode?
Cool.
Right, so what we're going to be doing today is Gigolo Harmageddo, as we decided it was going to be pronounced, or Harmageddo. Yeah. Either or is going to work.
That's it, yeah.
Gigolo Harmageddo, which is the following after Secular Hairs on Infestissimum. So do you mind if I do just a quick story recap for the viewers?
Of course, go ahead.
Thank you. Okay, so story recap time. Previously on The Gospel of Ghost, season one ended, Infestissimum started. There was about a 9-month gap between Opus and Infestissimum as the Antichrist grew inside Lilith, and obviously the plan to bring the Antichrist into the world is coming closer and closer to fruition. At the start of Infestissimum, the clergy of Satan, I should establish, by the way, that the Church of God, the church is for God and the clergy is for Satan. They've started to grow significantly, especially following Peraspera ad Inferi, but not strong enough quite yet to challenge the church. And then in Secular Hears, we sort of established that Satan had started putting like a little mystical helping hand into their plans, shall we say, just to sort of combat the strength of numbers of God. He has also started to put a fog over the minds of the followers of God to sort of sway them in his direction. That's where we're sitting at the moment.
Cool.
So, with that said, let's get on with it. Gigolo Harmageddo. Now, this is normally the part where I would say the first lyrics. But I don't want to say the first lyrics yet, because I want to talk about the title, because it doesn't appear in the song.
Aye.
One of the only ghost songs that doesn't have the title as a part of the lyric. So, and it's possibly one of the most interesting titles they've ever made. So,
true, agreed. I mean, it's got a deeper meaning, which is great, but it's so contrasting between obviously the first album and the rest of Infestissimum.
Agreed. But yes, Gigolo Harmageddo. And I'm sure you've looked some stuff up, and feel free to jump in whenever, because I have a massive paragraph of text. All right.
I'm excited.
So, as I said, I want to start off by discussing the title of the song. It's very important to the story that we're trying to tell here, both in a thematic sense and an understanding sense. So, firstly, Gigolo, which is usually spelt with a G, but we'll forgive them, has two distinct definitions that, while they are very similar, also vary dramatically in their meaning. Both of them, however, seem to fit the message conveyed in this song depending on which stance you take. The first meaning is a man supported by a woman, usually in return for his attentions. So, you know, this could be a sexual manner or not.
Yep.
And the second meaning is overtly sexual, that being a male prostitute, or more specifically, a high-class male escort. I'm sure you probably found out the same thing.
I had, I don't know, was it preconceived notions? Or I knew before of I don't know where from. I could not pinpoint a time I learned about this, probably at school. But yeah, what a gigolo was. And
oh, so I'm the only one with gigolo in my search engine, yeah?
Yeah.
Nice.
Nice. I think that brought about some interesting results.
Should have used incognito mode.
Yeah.
but anyway, yes, cool. that is what Gigolo means. So, yeah. In my opinion, this is where I think the first clue for the true source of this song is. Now, we were discussing briefly before the recording started. You thought that this song was from a brand new perspective of a brand new character, right?
Yeah.
Why do you think that?
So I think with Gigolo, it's very different from the start of the album, the way it builds up, because it's sort of still Latin-y, very structured, very dramatic, whereas this song is quite a big sort of change or contrast to that, and I think it really sort of over-dramatizes things and really sort of pushes forward a new character. I think it speaks about a single person or single entry of a person who seems to just come onto the scene and is sort of wreaking his havoc, wreaking his woe, as they say, and a lot more different sexual connotations in the song. But I think it does seem to introduce a new character to the fold.
Okay. I am going to agree with you. It is certainly a new perspective. Mm-hmm. But it is not necessarily a new character. It's the first time we've heard from him, but it may not be. It's definitely not the first time we've ever heard of him.
Not the first time he's referenced.
No, but... definitely not. No.
Okay, cool.
So go with me on this, right?
Cool.
I think that this song is from the perspective of the Antichrist while he's in the womb and coming out of the womb as he's being born.
Okay.
You know, that sounds weird, given the somewhat overtly sexual connotations of the song, but
okay.
I have to say, and I will defend myself here, the Antichrist is not a normal child. He is the spawn of evil. He is a demon and doesn't function the way a regular baby would.
Yeah.
Okay. I will try and back this argument up as we go out, but I want you to keep that in your mind that this is coming from his perspective. This is the first song we get of the main character of the album's perspective. Yeah. Okay?
Okay, cool.
So yeah, he's coming into the world fully knowing his own purpose. It's not, I'm gonna get my power down the line. He knows what he's on the earth for, okay?
Yep.
And just to support this sort of argument in a very minor way to start off with, this is kind of supported by the first meaning that I gave you of Gigolo, which is a man supported by a woman, usually in return for his attentions, right? Right.
Okay.
If you sort of look at it, squint at it at the end bit, okay?
Yeah.
This is kind of supported by the first meaning that he is a younger man, so he's a baby, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Being supported by a woman who, in this case, is his mother.
Yeah.
And he knows he will go on to corrupt the world of man. So
it's like a foreshadowing in a way, or foretelling of what's to happen.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool.
So, let's move on to the second part of this title, because we haven't even got to the lyrics yet. Do you want to take this part? Because I feel like I talked a lot.
Yeah, I think from what I looked at it, just a brief bit of research. So, obviously, we've been known about Gigolo, but the second bit, Harmageddon, I believe it meant, so Megiddo comes from an old word or old reference for like an Israeli city or a city in Israel. And Megiddo itself came from the word Armageddon. So, obviously, bringing in destruction and death and famine and the end of the world. So I think the way it sort of seems to me is, was it Gigolo Harmageddon? So the person or the creator of the end. The way I've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that's a pretty good translation. I do want to correct you on one thing though.
Cool.
What I've got, you said that Megiddo was actually created by the word Armageddon, but it's actually the reverse. Harmageddon, the title of the song, is an actual location in Israel. Right,
yeah.
Where it is said in the book of Revelation, an apocalyptic battle will take place.
Okay.
More specifically, it refers to one particular hill in the site of an ancient city named Tel Megiddo, known as Armageddon or Harmageddon. So this comes from a combination of the Hebrew word for hill, which is
Har,
bastardized / shortened version of Megiddo. So it was actually named Megiddo Hill. That is what Armageddon means.
Yeah. It's the flip of that. Okay, that's cool. History lesson as well.
My mind was blown when I found out. I had no idea.
That's really cool. Yeah.
Don't tell you, we never teach you anything on the Gospel of Ghosts.
You always learn something.
Exactly. Not all of it is useless band facts.
Yes.
But the usage of the location in the song title gives my theory some further weight, in my opinion, as although only a hypothetical battle is going to take place between the Antichrist and the church, it is still going to bring about the end times of their world. You can even go so far as to pair it with Gigolo and call him, as you said, the conceiver of the apocalypse.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the song title, out of the way. We're only 20 minutes in. Oh God.
That's brilliant.
I would say that the song title on this is by far one of the most interesting aspects of the song. Not that the song is bad by any stretch of the imagination. No, it's one of the strongest songs on Infest System and one of the most interesting lyrics. But yeah, the title was just so interesting to research for me. I really enjoyed it.
Agreed.
Lyrics time. Okay, so... I am the one who preys on weak. I offer everything they seek. And I am the one who comes, richly endowed, harvesting crops of fields that others have ploughed. I am the one, lascivious. Yes, I had to look up how to say lascivious, because who the hell says lascivious nowadays?
In everyday conversation.
Yeah, no. Oh my God, he's so lascivious. Oh, sorry, forgot to mention, the start of the song starts with breathing, right? It starts with those sighs. I'm sure you remember.
Yeah.
Just a callback to my argument, sort of backs off the reference that I made earlier to this being the birth of the Antichrist. These are his literal first breaths of him arriving on Earth.
Yeah. Okay, I like it.
So, I'll start us off. So, preying on the weak and offering everything they seek is a reference in my eyes to the power he'll have to sway the minds of those who are already somewhat indecisive in the war between God and Satan, you know, by offering their prize on his side. He is the corrupter of both physical and mental, you know?
Yeah.
If there is a weakness, a crack, anything in your mental fortitude, he will take it and he will use it. I think that's who he's referring to when he says weak.
Yeah.
And obviously saying that I offer everything they seek, it's like he may not be telling the truth, but he's definitely presenting them something they want to see.
Yeah, I could agree with that. I think it's also a bit like the topic of the false god and sort of false prophecies and false pretensions. The fact he's able to manipulate people to do what he wants, and whether it be the weak-minded or those who don't have much, he's what he's doing, he's pretty good at it.
Exactly, yeah. Some would say that's what he was born to do. Oh, Jesus. Just stop listening now. Doesn't get any better. I want to continue on, actually, because this is important to my argument.
Yep.
I am the one who comes richly endowed, harvesting crops of fields that others have ploughed. I know that I'm arguing for this song being the perspective of a baby, mm-hmm. or a demon baby. Let me say that. And yes, I'm not going to deny it. It has an overtly sexual theme to it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's present throughout the song. But if you actually dig into the meanings behind some of the words, it takes on a far more interesting premise than just haha, innuendo, no innuendo. It takes on a more interesting premise than that. So, first off, richly endowed. The first thing that jumps to mind is obviously, you know, mm-hmm. a penis.
Agreed.
Two grown men giggling at the word penis. Welcome to the gospel of ghost. But its meaning is not linked to that here, in my opinion.
No.
One of the definitions of endowed is provided or equipped with. And I think this is actually referring more to the power that he possesses rather than a physical meaning. He's endowed with the power of his dad. He's endowed with the power of Satan. He's endowed with the power to corrupt mankind. I don't think it's referring to, you know, little Satan. I think it's referring to his actual supernatural ability or his cunning or something like that.
I'd agree with that. I think, sorry, in a sense, you seem to forget sometimes what the word endowed actually means. And it's obviously that double entendre or the double meaning. But it's like, isn't it sort of bestow upon someone or to have that, as you say, that power bestowed upon you in that way?
Provided or equipped with, yes.
Yeah, exactly in that sense. So rather than just the sexual connotations, there is the actual... real world application of it.
Exactly, yeah. I think it's something that hopefully Ghost intended to play with. This could just be a complete song about sex, to be honest, you know, on their perspective, but I'm going to choose to fight that.
Cool.
Harvesting crops of fields that others have ploughed is kind of a dual meaning in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one, he is taking the population that has been grown under the eyes of God, so they've been sprouted under the eyes of God for his own. So he's literally taking the crops of God.
Yeah.
Or, secondly, he is harvesting the rewards of the work of the clergy has been putting into converting the masses. So he's coming along at the last minute and taking the rewards that the clergy has been growing. What one do you think is the most fitting meaning here?
I think I prefer the first meaning. Because I feel that obviously it feels like he's betraying or not betraying or just taking over the work that obviously God has done. with the population, with God's people essentially, and corrupting them. So they maybe God has put all the hard work into growing them up to this point, into adulthood or to certain standards, and then the Antichrist is coming along and ruining that. I think that's quite a good interpretation.
Thank you. Yeah, I actually agree with you there. I think that both of them work, but I think the first one is more poetic.
I agree.
And right, I wanna ask you a question because God knows I'd never really encountered the word lascivious before. Really, what did you take of that line if you researched it?
That line, I think it was just I never really knew what the word lascivious meant. I think I still don't. I still can't remember if I looked up or not before. But it just seemed to me it's just very, very, as it like sexually connotated. I think
it is sexually connotated. I'm not going to lie. I said I have written down here. I am the one lascivious. On the surface, again, it is a very sexual meaning. But but I think in the context of this particular verse, it draws more to mean indecent or obscene in a moral sense, not in a sexual sense, because it means lewd, it means obscene, indecent, immoral, it means all of those words. So I think that
does fit to that, to that meaning as well.
You could use it in an, it's not very common obviously, but I think you can use it in a non-sexual meaning.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, yeah.
So yeah, anything to add on those lyrics there?
Just in terms of the basic one, of harvesting crops, of fields that others have ploughed, I think that obviously the third sort of meaning, which is going back to just the really base sexually connotated understanding of the song, it's it feels that, yeah, it's just reaping the sow of the land and sort of taking as many women as he can, or people as he can, pretty much. Going back to it, when you first hear the song and you think it is just all about sex, it's...
The song is... undeniably all about sex, right?
Yeah.
At its base level, it is about sex.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not trying to deny that. The son of the Antichrist, baby or not, he is the evil demon.
He's going for it.
He's a horny bastard, right? And he will mature really, really fast because he's not a human. And he'll do all this stuff. But obviously at the moment, just from the way it's sung, just from the way the song is phrased, and just from the way it's presented to us, it does sound like a very calming song a child would sing, you know? From like the guitar, like from the way it's, you know.
Very melodic.
Exactly.
Like a fairy tale, nursery rhyme.
Exactly. It sounds like something that if you replace the lyrics, you could sing it feasibly to a child, or it sounds like something a child could make up.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
Especially one who's the epitome of all evil. So
agreed.
Yeah, completely agreed. Fierce sexual, but I am not saying the phrase, I want to go a bit deeper after going all about, oh yeah, no, it's all about sexuality.
We need to go deeper. Deeper than that.
Oh, God.
This is brilliant.
So, I definitely have to rate this episode explicit. So, let's move on to the next verse. Let's move on to the next verse, where it arguably just gets worse.
Yeah. Could go back to the first verse.
That's it. Thanks for joining us on the Gospel of Ghost. I'll see you next time for Ghoulé Zombie Queen. No, we will finish it off. There's so much of this is getting edited out. Right, so, I am the son of one below, the progeny of Beast of Woe, and I am the son who comes into the daughters of men, destroying all and make them want it again. And then I am the son lascivious again.
Yeah.
So, that was hard to get through with a straight face. The first two lines, I don't even think we need to establish them that much, you know what I mean?
No, I think they'd be very powerful, very poignant. I think it's just, again, it's setting the main sort of scene of the Antichrist coming to, or foretelling the Antichrist and what he's going to reap upon the world.
Yeah. I will say that it does kind of back up my argument that this song is from the perspective of the Antichrist, because he does refer to himself as that I am the son of the one below.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that he is, I am the one. So I do think he is the one singing this song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah.
The other two lines, well, are, you know.
So it devolves. It gets nasty.
Okay, I've got this.
Good luck. Good luck, Noel.
Thanks. Comes into the daughters of men. Is a pretty obvious one on the surface of it, along with the suggestive follow-up. However, allow me to present an alternative interpretation. As I said, I believe this song is a sort of pre-to-mid-birth dream of the baby Antichrist inside of Lilith.
Mm-hmm.
That context is important because destroying all and make them wanted again, I think, could be referring to the fact that this is leading into his birth slash is in the middle of his birth, and he is in the middle of, and I will back this up further with another song, but he is in the middle of killing slash destroying his mother, who in her service for Satan would gladly birth him again. That is my interpretation of it. Pretty sure I've established it like somewhere on the show. Lilith is going to die at the end of this song. Whenever the Antichrist is born, she's dead.
That's it, yeah.
Right? And that's what I think as a child, I think that could be interpreted as.
Yeah, I agree. I think I remember from you mentioning before with in terms of Lilith and that she's just much as she might like Satan or fall for Satan and his beliefs and his views, she is just a carrier for the Antichrist and pretty much nothing more in a quite a sad way.
Exactly. And I think that she's just a human. You know what I mean? She's just a human.
Yeah.
He is a demon.
Yeah.
In my opinion, she's not surviving that. She's not surviving that birth. So yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. And as maybe has become ritual now, do you want to go over the overtly sexual portion of the song, Bryn? Don't even think we need to.
It's quite obvious, like some of the points in the song in terms of that, which I like the fact that obviously we're going deeper into the lyrics to find the second meaning.
Stop using that phrase.
I can't stop myself doing it now. It's second nature.
Well, you do know what they say. Once you pop, you can't stop.
But yeah, no, I agree. I think it's very obvious. It's very in your face.
I just slapped my own head at you saying that. I need to stop. Get out of this mindset, Niall. Jesus Christ. Right. This is the equivalent of someone being horny on me and on Twitter. This is what it is. It's just me. It's just us making sex jokes the entire freaking song.
It's hard not to. It's hard not to.
Okay. So moving on.
Swiftly on,
yes. This is sung, by the way, from another perspective, and I'll get into that in a minute. But he is the one desacralizer, which, goddamn, is a hard word to say. He is the son of the enticer, the all-seeing subterranean Kaiser. He is the way. Now, a brand new perspective within the song, and one which I want to focus on.
Yep.
I think the lyrics are pretty self-evident in their meaning. They are very much like, I am the son of one below. It just means that he is the Antichrist. I will make an aside note, by the way, and out of storyline say, I fucking love the lyric Subterranean Kaiser. It is one of my favorite phrases of all time.
I didn't realize it at first, but like understanding the importance of it, and it's just such a good...
If there isn't a band named the Subterranean Kaiser... There should be.
I'm writing it down now.
Yeah. There should be a band called Subterranean Kaiser.
I don't know what we'll play or what we'll do.
I'm playing the kazoo, obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously.
As long as you've got a cool sounding name, that's all that counts.
We'll make it.
We can do absolute shit music, do nothing, but as long as the name's there.
Exactly. People will buy it for Subterranean Kaiser merch. But right.
It's great, yeah, it's great.
Fantastic. But yes, so this has two options, right?
Mm-hmm.
Personally, from perspective-wise, this has two options, and I personally know which one I'm leaning towards. I would be interested to know what one you're leaning towards.
Cool.
The first is, unless like in my opinion, but please don't let that sway you, is that this is Lilith's perspective, whispering to herself to keep strong, and the baby, you know, either to calm the baby or... Mm-hmm. You know, like
calm herself, keep
herself strong, and also, you know, mothers like to talk to the baby, so maybe that is her talking to him, soothing words from the mother. Or B, secondly, the one that I think works best in my head for my plot line at least is that this is actually a group of women, so midwives.
Yeah, I was thinking exactly.
Yeah, midwives, nuns, what have you?
Yeah,
gathered to help with the birth. It's sort of due to the way the sort of ritualistic nature of the line. Are sung and the praise that's being lorded onto him.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think in terms of the first option you mentioned, I think the first scenario. Sorry, I feel that it's maybe if it was herself saying it, I feel like it's herself trying to reassure herself as to why she's doing this or why it's a good thing. But then obviously the second option in terms of the way the lyrics are pronounced or presented within the song, they're chanted. It seems to be like a group of women, and obviously the setting scene as you mentioned in your scenario with the birth of the Antichrist, it does make sense for them to be like a haggle of anti nuns or midwives etc. who are sort of chanting this thing into existence and supporting it.
So you're agreeing with the second one then?
I am. Yeah,
awesome. Cool. Anything else to say about this?
It's just great. Like, I never really thought about it. I mean, this is probably my favorite, or one of my favorite songs on the album. I think this, probably this and Year Zero. Probably Paris Bearer as well. I do like it. Or Paris Bearer, how you say it. But this one sort of stuck to me. And just, yeah, this end bit is just so, you don't really think about it as it sort of sings off a song, as it finishes off the song. But it's just so great. The lyrics are just brilliant. And there's just so many ways to perceive them or understand them. But it's just great. Great songwriting. I'd say that.
Yeah, thank God for that. Or sorry, thanks Aiden for that, because otherwise I wouldn't have a podcast. There wouldn't be a show. Right, we're on the home stretch now.
Yeah,
we've got
cool.
One more verse and one last really annoying line to do. So, I am the way, and you invited me to stay. However fair and pure, you crave the wand. You're a wizard, Ari. You see through me what lies beyond. So, yeah. I am the way, and you invited me to stay, in my opinion, is the song has been sort of working up to the birth of the Antichrist.
Yeah.
I think him saying, I am the way, and you've invited me to stay, is him having finally arrived fully. Like, he's out at that point.
I'd agree. You know? Yeah.
And, yeah, the last two lines are obviously a direct message from the Antichrist to the world going forward, that, you know,
it's like, you shall fall before me, you shall obey me.
And, yeah. No matter your outlook on life or virtues, you can be corrupted and seduced in some form or another to bring about what lies beyond.
Yeah, and that's it. It's not like the people are incorruptible and no one's safe. I think that's sort of give the message, is say, like, no one can escape this. No one's safe.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah. And whether this is a good thing, whether this is a false vision or a good vision, guess that remains to be seen.
Yeah, who knows?
In later seasons of Gospel and Ghosts, season 3 maybe, who knows?
I was going to say, just a brief aside at the moment, which I've noticed throughout the song, is that the first two sentences, or two lines of the verse, on each verse, sorry, they're sort of like really hard hitting factual per se about what's happening in terms of the story. But then the last two are just sort of the sexual connotation ones. I think it's weird how it works. So, I am the way, you invite me to stay, and then it goes into the sexually connotated thing, and then before it was, I'm the son of one below, progeny of the beast of woe, and then before, and then it goes into the sexual. It seems like they are the stamps, they're like the marks or the seals of approval, and then goes into the
I never actually noticed that.
And then it goes into the sexual stuff, as if it's to say, like, here's the serious stuff, that's out of the way with, and now here's me chatting shit.
I never actually noticed that. That's awesome. Ah, that's so cool. I mean, just based on my theory, and I'm going to ask you at the end whether you think the theory is adequate or not.
Cool. Okay.
Just based on my theory, if you look at it, it is sort of a childlike mind. A childlike mind that is somewhat serious for the first bit, but then gets distracted with all the other things that are going on in the world and what he wants to do.
Yeah.
You know? It's someone with a very short attention span, like a child just being like, oh yeah, this is why I'm here. But then, yeah. Oh yeah, wait, hang on a second. There's ice cream over there. I really want that ice cream.
It's very, you know? It's sort of human. I know he's meant to be like Antichrist and anti-human, but it's very human in a way. Like, it's just natural. It's sort of like nature, I feel, in a way.
Yeah, no, he's still technically a kid.
A living being, yeah.
Yeah, he's still a living being.
Sentient.
Yeah. But he's not human.
No, exactly.
This is what we're going to have to remember going forward, is that he's just not human. Yeah, so that's really cool. No, I never noticed that. Thank you for bringing that to my attention.
That's all right. As we've been going through, as you sort of like look at something for so long and you start to really break it down, then you start to see all of the true meanings and all of that. You see things differently. I'll say that for sure.
I think one of the best things about having guests on the show for me is that quite often I'll get lost into very deep meanings of stuff. You know, like, obviously I spend so much time researching.
Oh yeah, yeah. Your research,
Megiddo and stuff like that. That sometimes, like, obvious stuff like that, I will just completely miss it because it's just like, yeah, just wasn't paying attention because I was too focused elsewhere.
Lost in the.
It's nice to have different viewpoints on the show as well. As someone who's coming into the song not so completely analyzing every.
Yeah, no,
word,
I agree.
You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, different perspective in a way.
Exactly. Let's do the final line, right? I know there's four more lines, but three of them are, I am the one lascivious, right? This is where my theory falls apart a little bit. I can't think of anything for it. So, with magic potion, Nivius.
What, can I quickly ask, I'm guessing you must have researched Nivius.
I do, yes. Nivius.
Thank you.
Nivius means resembling snow, especially in color. So, what it means is a white potion.
Okay.
There's really only one substance that I can think of maybe related to this song that could be
okay,
that.
Now I'm getting it.
Yeah.
Now I'm getting it. Okay.
Doesn't really fit with the rest of my theory, though.
Yeah. I think, again, in terms of the foreshadowing or foretelling, I think, obviously, with the sexual connotation as well, I think it's just saying it from a later date. Are we on the same line? Is he on about spreading these seeds?
Yeah, he probably is, yeah. He probably is.
So, yeah, I just think, again, it's just the foretelling of it, and obviously, along with the rest of the sexual connotations, I think that's just and again, it goes from the seriousness to the silliness again, I feel, where he's obviously the same chanting, I am the one lascivious, I am the one lascivious, and it's quite, as you say, still quite satanic and quite serious and chanting in the way it's spoken. Mm. But then that sort of line sort of is so different, I feel. It just seems, again, it's like his mind's wandered again. And it's
that's true. Yeah, that's not bad. That's very true, actually. Yeah, well done. You supported my argument there. Thank you very much.
We're back in the room.
I was pulling my hair out. But yeah, that is the end of the song, right?
Cool.
And just before we go off air, I would like to ask you one question. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the plot line, the theory that I have presented, is strong enough to continue going forward? Does it match the song?
I would agree so, yes. I think what you've introduced to me today is sort of taking what I believe to the song, of obviously introducing a new character, although it's not a new character, it's the Antichrist, but introducing sort of more of a new personality, or giving a living being a personality. I think you've sort of taken that and gone to the sort of next level with it, and sort of managed to weave it into the main plot line. So I think it does work. I'm impressed now.
Awesome. And with that, we'll wrap up this episode of The Gospel of Ghost. Thank you so much for joining us, Bryn. Where can they find you?
Cool, yeah. Just really, the Ghost page is Ghost Clergy UK. It's run by myself and Aidan. We have quite a lot of fun on there. Obviously, it's all ghost-related, lots of chats and stuff. So, yeah, it's The Ghost Clergy UK on Instagram.
Awesome. Thank you very much for joining me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, me too. Thank you, Noel. Again, it's been absolutely mind-boggling, I think is the word. But cool. It's really good to sort of get really deep into these lyrics, because for something we love, for a band we love, so it's nice to find this sort of, don't want to say again, I was going to say deeper meanings.
That's it. We're done.
But no, yeah, it's nice to discuss these things, and it's cool. It's a really cool project you got going on here. So I wish you the best for it.
Thank you very much. And thank you guys for listening. And we'll see you in about 2 weeks' time when we're joined by our next guest, Eden, for Goulet / Zombie Queen. Hail Satan.